Alright, I'd like to welcome you to the first episode of You Heard It Here podcast. This is a very, very unique podcast in the sense that we're two high school students doing this. We're extremely passionate sports fans, and we really, really started this podcast to give our insights into sports because we love talking about sports and we want to make sure that our opinions are heard by anyone that's interested in listening to maybe a younger audience and maybe not professional analysts. And yeah, we are biased fans. We all have our favorite teams. It's just mainly friendly banter here and there. But for the most part, we're going to try and keep this as informative as possible. We're going to try and offer new perspectives into, you know, basketball and football. We're going to have multiple of our friends coming off and joining our podcast. And we'll try and keep this as professional as possible and make sure that everyone who listens has a good time. So, to begin with, we wanted to sort of talk about basketball today, and it's currently, at the date that we're recording this, the 20th of March, which means that the NBA playoffs are just around the corner, around more than a month away, I'd say. So we want to talk about what we think is, what we predict to be our playoff positions and brackets for the upcoming postseason, and really why these playoffs are going to be one of the most exciting playoffs that the NBA has seen in a very, very long time. So just before we start, we'd like to give a small introduction. So our names are Harsh and Vineeth. We're both 11th grade students. And like I said, we're really, really passionate sports fans who have been following both basketball and football for a really, really long time.
Hi guys. Yeah, so I think Harsh, you've started going to be talking about what we think are going to be placements for the Eastern Western Conference NBA playoffs. I think it's safe to say that in both conferences, the one seeds are, I think in the East, at least the Bucks, I think, are guaranteed to
be
the first or second seed. I think the Bucks Raptors are kind of guaranteed. So they can be shuffling within those two, but I think it's pretty safe to assume that they're going to be the first and two seeds. And I think they deserve to be the two team because they've been the best teams all year round, been most consistent. They have some of the best players in the conference, namely Giannis Antetokounmpo. Also, their MVP front runner, in my opinion, and Kawhi Leonard, possibly the best two-way player in the league right now. And I think the East is special in that it becomes really interesting 3-8.
I think
3-4-5, Sixers, 7-8, Pacers, and Celtics. I think those can be shuffled around because Celtics will be half a game behind of four. And that also makes the first round matchups really interesting because we could have potentially have the Sixers and Celtics facing off in the first round, which could lead to a very early and disappointing exit to one of the top teams in the East.
Yeah, exactly. And if we're looking at each and every team in the first 8 seeds in the Eastern Conference, they each have their really, really unique stories coming into the season. Like, if you look at the Bucks, the way that they projected themselves to the top seed, I don't really think anyone expected them to be a top seed. Yeah, Giannis had a great, great season last year, but I don't think personally I ever expected the Bucks to be the first seed. Looking at the Raptors, they made their blockbuster trades. They acquired Kawhi Leonard. They got Kawhi Leonard and Danny Green while giving away one of the most loyal players of all time in DeMar DeRozan. Looking at the 76ers, they brought in their big four. They're looking like a serious contender going into it. The Pacers, despite the Oladipo injury, are still going really, really strong into the season. And yeah, the Celtics have had some mental issues throughout the season, but I feel like they are still in contention for the big four that are the representation of the East this season.
And I think one thing that's happened as a result of the top four teams in the East being really strong this year, including the Pacers, I think a lot of people are not noticing or are sleeping on the Nets, the Heat, the Magic. Though that race is also heating up because the Magic only 1.5 games off, and the Hornets are only 3 games off. And I think there are like 6-7 games left, and so it could potentially be like 2-3 teams dropping out and the seeds getting shuffled in the last minute. But right now, I think the most surprising team for me in the East Conference, in terms of positive surprise, being like improving upon what they did last year and surprising everybody, it's been the Nets. I think D'Angelo Russell is really coming to himself, coming to his team, understood his game, understood what he can do, and I think he's moved on from the Lakers and that whole mess. And the Heat also, they've been surprising. They don't have the greatest team. They're riding on Dwayne Wade's one last dance. So I think they have a lot of momentum, and I think there's a lot of the team wants Dwayne Wade to make the playoffs one last time. But I think we should sleep on the Magic, especially after they traded away. They traded for Markelle Fultz. So I think they could be an interesting team down the line, but I don't think this year they have that much potential. And moving on to the West, it's the same as always. I think like 3 years ago, the seeds 3 through 6 all have the same record in the West. So I think this year also it's very competitive, and we've seen the Thunder teams are tanking in the West also, like the Mavericks. I think they've lost, like they've been losing the last losing a lot in the last 10 games. And the most interesting story for me over the last month or after the All-Star break is the Thunder. Like, they've been a great team over the season as a whole, but after the break, they've really been struggling and the 3-game losing streak. So I think that's actually hurting Paul George's MVP case, because they're 6th seed right now, and potentially it could be the 8th seed because only half a game off the 8th seed.
Exactly.
I think that's an interesting thing to look out for.
And if we're talking about the competition that's there in the West versus the competition that's there in the East, like, we can take a look at the 8th seed in the Eastern Conference being the Miami Heat currently, who are 0.486. Now, if we look at a team that's 0.486 or roughly 0.486 in the Western Conference, in the Kings, for example, they're the 9th seed and are 6 games behind the Clippers. So I think the way that the West has structured this season is that, like, really young teams like the Kings, for example, that have a lot of competitive nature just aren't getting the opportunity to be in the playoff picture. And this isn't even considering the fact that they're ahead of the Lakers that have the greatest player of all time.
Yeah, that's also a really interesting observation. And I think the Nuggets could steal the first seed from the Warriors here, because only half a game off. And the Rockets have really come. I think they're the third. I think they're probably better overall than OKC. I think a lot of people are overrating how good OKC has been, because Andre Robinson hasn't come back. The defense has slipped. Now they're now the 10th best defense, where previously they were the 3rd best defense.
But right.
The Rockets, their offense, man. I mean, and James Harden, he's the dude. I mean, he's been scoring all season long. He's been balling. I think Chris Paul is coming back. He's had an injury. Chris Capella had an injury. So I think, and the Blazers could also potentially drop off because CJ McCollum injury. I think that's going to be crucial, because that 1 week is going to be big. And the Spurs, San Antonio Spurs, I don't know how he does it, but Greg Popovich, the greatest coach of all time, in my opinion, he's got them back in the playoffs. I think they're winning record for the 22nd straight season. And they're the hottest team in the league right now.
Yep.
Hello?
Yeah, keep going. We'll edit this part out. Hello? What happened? Okay, no problem. I'll pause the recording. Yeah, I got it. Yeah.
Hello? Just tell me that date 3-1 and tell me when you join the
Okay.
And the Spurs, man, they're the hottest team in the league. Just beat the Warriors at home. I mean, they're on a roll, and I think they have a pretty easy schedule. The Thunder actually, in fact, have the second hardest schedule for the last for the remaining games. I think the Thunder could play this schedule. There can be a significant movement in the Western Conference standings also. So I think it's going to be really interesting playoffs. The most interesting since I think the last 5 years because LeBron's on the East. So it's going to be really interesting.
Exactly. And speaking of the Spurs, I feel like a lot of people were saying that they were inconsistent throughout the season, but Pasley in the last month, the way that they've been balling, I think it's really proved that they're not a team in the East that are trying to clinch that 8 seed. They're not in contention for the 8 seed, as opposed to, for example, the Kings and the Clippers and the Jazz, who are sort of hovering around that spot. But I really think the Spurs have a chance to not necessarily make a deep run in the playoffs, but sort of surprise people in the sense that the way that DeRozan and Aldridge are kind of, I mean, it's a team full of vets that also has a young core and a decent depth off the bench. And of course, like you said, Greg Popovich, the greatest coach of all time. He's nearing his retiring age, and I really don't think that he wants to spend the last few years coaching a rebuilding team. So I feel like the Spurs for the next few seasons do have to be able to make playoff runs like they have been in this season. And if we're looking at teams in the West that are tanking, I mean, obviously no one expected the Lakers to be the 11th seed. No one expected LeBron to not make the playoffs, and I think this is he's been making the playoffs for the past like 6 or 7 years now. And it's really saddening because the Lakers, you know, you've had the front office issues in the sense that they want to fire their head coach, they want to get in new players. The Anthony Davis trade didn't
Yeah. Yeah. Also talk about how you think Luke Walton should be reconsidered, that the position should be regarding him or automatically move, saying yeah, because now LeBron, even though he's a preseason MVP favorite, who do you think is MVP right now? This transition like that. And wait, who do you think is going to be the MVP? Who's going to be? We should have some debate. We can't agree on everything. Fine, I'll say it's James Harden. I think we should do it before the MVP thing, and don't jump around. Yeah.
So as I was saying about, you know, Luke Walton and the front office issues that the Lakers are having, it's really interesting how they're going to deal with this coming into the offseason. The thing about LeBron is when he goes to a team, he is the GM. He sort of decides how he wants the team to be shaped, and it's no surprise because he has gotten head coaches fired in the past before, back in his original time in Cleveland. So I'm really, really excited to see what the Lakers will do with Luke Walton. Are they going to give him another chance? Because everyone was coming out and saying that Luke Walton is not going to be staying at the Lakers. He's going to be fired. But then the owner, she came out and said that Luke Walton is my guy and that he's going to stay. So, and then, of course, how is LeBron going to fit into this whole situation? That's really going to be interesting. But that's a different topic for another episode. Right now, I want to focus on what would be the impact of a potential first-round matchup between the second seed in the Nuggets and the seventh seed in the Jazz.
I think it's a really, really interesting matchup, and I think that's a potential for upset in terms of the seed. I don't necessarily think the Jazz are that worse of a team compared to the Nuggets, at least in terms of their regular season record. They're only like 6 games behind, and I think that's a lot of due to like the injuries they've had in Donovan Mitchell's second year regression compared to his first year outburst. Maybe like, oh yeah, next year is going to be All Star, he's going to be possibly an All NBA team. I don't think anybody NBA team, but I think a lot of people expected an All-Star season out of them. I think that aggression has hurt the Jazz in terms of placement, but in a playoff series, I think in the West, the Jazz can beat any team except the Warriors in a 7-game series. I mean, that's how good their defense is, that's how talented they are. I mean, Joe Ingles is the man. He's mad. You saw what he did with Paul George last year. Donovan Mitchell, Ricky Rubio almost like outplayed Westbrook last year in the series against Oklahoma City Thunder. So I think that could be a potential for upset. I think another potential for upset is I think in the East also there's some potential for upsets in the first round, because I think the Nets match up pretty the Pistons match up pretty decently with Sixers. I don't think they can beat them. I think there's a potential for upset. I think the Pacers can take on the Celtics now. I think even though the Celtics are lower seed, I'm pretty sure going into that series, if it stands the way it is, versus Pacers versus Celtics, 4 seed versus 5 seed. I think even though everybody expects the Celtics to win, I think the Pacers could take on the Celtics because they match up pretty well. They both have long players, both are wing dominated. And so I think that those two series in the East and West are going to be very interesting. I think we should be covered for that.
Exactly. And speaking of both the Pacers and the Pistons, I don't think anyone expected the Pacers to maintain that third and fourth seed after Oladipo got injured. People basically wrote them off for the rest of the season. But I feel like if they're able to maintain with the way that they have been right now, with the way Bogdanovich and Miles Turner have been playing, they can probably make a deep playoff run, assuming that they do get the Pistons, they do get the Nets in the first round or the Pistons in the second round. And I feel like the Pistons as well, the way that Blake Griffin has been playing this season, it's really incredible because they swept the Raptors in the regular season, obviously, with Dwayne Casey being the Raptors' former coach. And I think they're a team to look out because they have a really good coach.
Yeah, I think that's a really interesting situation. Considering the fact that Dwayne Casey was the Raptors' coach, and I don't think people have been talking about this. This has actually happened in the NFL before, 2001 Super Bowl, where the coach changed, but the system remained the same. And so when they met in the Super Bowl, the coach destroyed his whole team. I think that could be something to look out for, even though it's the NBA and it's a 7-game series, so the better team usually wins. I think Nick Nurse, I think he's not been caught because he's pretty much been using the system that Dwayne Casey established and how he transformed the Raptors offense, how he transformed DeMar DeRozan's 3-point shot. I think that could be an interesting series. I think we should look at that one. I think Nick Nurse could be caught out potentially with the fact that he hasn't changed the system or not, and that Dwayne Casey has the opportunity to play in the first round.
Yeah, exactly.
Potentially.
I mean, any way that we look at it, I feel like we can't really determine a single winner or like a confirmed winner for any of these series because it feels like it's going to be a postseason of upsets, just considering the way that the regular season has been. But
that being said, I think one series where I wouldn't expect any upsets is the Bucks versus Heat. I think that's pretty much in favor of
the Bucks. In favor of the Bucks.
You don't have anybody who can stop them. But I think other than that, every series is going to be interesting. And I think the way the table ends at the end of the season is going to be especially important in determining who wins. The Pistons fall to the 7th seed. I think that actually might be beneficial to them to play the Raptors rather than the 76ers. I think the matchup by the Raptors going to the system, having Blake Griffin and stuff like that.
Right. And just speaking of the Bucks, Giannis is my MVP for the season.
I mean, he certainly is a top 2 player. I think he deserves to be in the MVP conversation, no doubt about that. Him, James Harden, Paul George. But for me, it's certainly James Harden, because James Harden, like, without James Harden, so the amount of time that they had players injured, Chris Paul, Clinton Capella, I think they wouldn't have made the playoffs in that, because especially the start they had, everybody's calling on them, rotating the two best defensive players. Everybody's like saying, oh, they made a mistake, or they're done, they're not even going to challenge the Warriors anymore. They blew the challenge, they blew the window. I think James Harden, on that historic scoring team, I think he had like 32 games with 32 points or more, 30 points or more. And now, in fact, after today's morning thing, he has a 30-point game against every team in the NBA. I think with these numbers, even though there's been a scoring explosion, more number of 3-point shots, again, all of that, he doesn't have good defense as Giannis. He's not even a candidate like Paul George. He doesn't have as much percentages as some of the other candidates like Steph Curry and stuff. But I think he's had the most impact on a single team in the league. I seriously think James Harden is the MVP. Like, he's been the man throughout the year, and he's carried that team. And I think he's said in certain interviews, I think that really is the essence of his MVP campaign, or like his MVP push. Because without him, I don't think the team would have been in this position. Whereas with Giannis, even though Giannis has had a better coach over the years, his team has actually improved. It was how James Harden's team actually become worse, but it seemed to be contenders to the Warriors, at least better than the Nuggets in terms of experience and stuff like that. So I think, taking into all those considerations, even though Giannis might be the better overall player, I think James Harden's offensive impact, is the best offensive player in the league. He's one of the best offensive players we've seen in a long time. I think that makes him MVP case. And don't sleep on Paul George. I think he has a chance to.
Right. And when you're looking at James Harden, I think you're looking at the current best scoring guard in the NBA without question. He's having a historic season in terms of his numbers. Yeah, he's not shooting the ball as well, and he's not as efficient of a player as Paul George, like you mentioned. But when you're looking at Giannis, you're looking at a player who has transferred the Bucks, who had one of the worst seasons in the NBA a couple of years ago, to a genuine championship contending team. And the way that he's sort of carried their two-way style of play in both their excellent offense and their, like, the sort of 3-and-D play style that they've developed throughout the entire season, and allowing they don't really have any undersized players, in the sense that they have a 6'8 shooting guard in Chris Middleton. Giannis is a 7-foot ball handler. And the way that he's carried that team to the number one seed, and not only in the East, but in the NBA, I feel like he has a very, very strong case for winning the
NBA. And don't get me wrong, I think he's the most unstoppable force in the league since Shaq. And he's certainly going to be the best player in the league in like 2-3 years. I think he's the best player. I think he's the top 3 player right now in the NBA. I think he's had a better season, a lot of bona fide stars we've seen in the league. I think he's had a better season than Kevin Durant, to be honest. So, in terms of that, I see where there's a case that can be made that Giannis and Kapoor. But man, James Harden, his scoring streak, it's just too hard for me to ignore. And it's put aside for like Giannis's having the fact that he has better teammates, better 3-point shooters, and the best team, they have a better coach, and stuff like that. I think D'Antoni, I think it's interesting. I think he's going to win the league MVP, be back-to-back MVP. At least if I had a vote in league for James Harden. But I think more interesting than that is going to be how they perform in the playoffs.
Right, exactly. And looking at both the Bucks and the Rockets, I feel like they have high expectations going into the playoffs, because, you know, obviously the Rockets taking the Warriors to a 7-game series in the conference finals last season was really, really incredible, and they nearly won that last game. So I feel like the Rockets do have a deep run in the playoffs this season, as do the Bucks, obviously, sitting at the first seed in the East. So it's going to be really interesting to see how both of these players can lead their teams in the postseason. And either way it goes, I'm sure that both of them are going to be both of them have really, really strong cases for MVP. So we'll have to see how the votes turn out.
Yeah, I think based on like the stuff that's been said in the various group app votes that we talk, I think James Harden has a case, but I think Giannis is probably going to win. But I don't think that should be the case. I think James Harden should win, but we'll see.
Yeah, we will. And I think that's all we have to say in terms of talking about the NBA for today. Obviously, the following month is only going to get more excited by confirming which seeds are going to be locked in for both teams in the West and the East. But talking about football, and we're having one of the most, I honestly can't even say one of the most exciting Champions League, because for the past 3 or 4 seasons, the amount of upsets that are happening in the round of 16, it's been astronomical. Like, you would not expect this sort of I wouldn't actually call it a surprise, because the way that these teams are formulating their away and home advantages in the Champions League is really, really interesting, because right now you're seeing teams getting knocked off after getting a 3-1 lead, after getting a 4-1 lead, and I feel like that's something that we have to talk about, because how in a game such as football, where players are more focused around developing a better game plan, a better coaching system, how does this lead to teams developing a 4-1 lead and being able to blow that in an away leg? I mean, it's more of a mental issue here for me in terms of talking about the Champions League. And I feel like when you're looking at one of the biggest knockout stages in the history of sports in the Champions League, in terms of professional sports, I feel like the mentality and motivation that the players possess to get a comeback is extremely, extremely important. That's something that I want to talk about.
I certainly agree with you. I think it's also to do with the mentality of social media. Like, let's say after 4-1, when they become complacent and think, oh, there's no way they come back. And I think that was the case in terms of Real Madrid versus Ajax. I think that complacency and the fact that they weren't as good as they were, they didn't have a great coach, Lari had been fired since and they got back Zidane. So I don't think that will happen again for Real Madrid. But I think they were complacent and Ajax had a great, great, great game. They had a great strategy. I think that's really important. I think teams become better at strategizing away goal. I think what's beneficial is that once they're down like 3-0, 2-0, they don't play with fear anymore because they don't have anything to lose. I think that was the end of the Man game.
Right, exactly.
When they beat PSG, when they came back from the 2-0, I think that was the first time ever the team has come back from a 2-0 home loss. And so I think Man U also has a factor of luck. I'm not going to deny it, even though I'm a Manchester United fan. And I think there was a factor of luck, and that also played a big role. Like, even in the PSG 6-1 Barca game we saw 3-4 years ago, a couple of years ago, there was a big factor of luck in the last goal being controversial offside, controversial
exactly.
The Man U game. I think luck plays an important role, circumstance. So I think it's more strategizing. I think the important aspect is this debate has come up. Like, I think they might be removing the importance of away goals, especially in terms of the modernizing of the game. Like, because now we have high quality airplanes, every team has a private jet, high quality hotels. I don't think away makes that big of a difference anymore. I think the fact that you have your fans in front of you, I think there was a petition, or not a petition, rather, but there were discussions, especially on these talk shows, about how they should remove away goals, at least when there's the importance that they have in determining the tie. I think that's a really interesting thing that it's going to happen over the next couple of years.
Right, because if you look at the modern game, the way that fans are adapting to the modern game, you know, traveling to another country itself to see their club playing, I feel like the atmosphere, or like not really the atmosphere, but the entire purpose of having an away game, an away goal rule, is that it's like I said, most of football in the modern era is based around mentality and motivation. And having, for example, Roma versus Porto, Roma last season were able to upset Barcelona and make the Champions League semifinals. And that's truly something historic. If you're able to upset one of the biggest clubs in the world, you do deserve some recognition. And then this season, they go off into the round of 16 in the first leg, able to get a 2-1 lead against Porto. But in the second leg, Porto is able to come back and beat them 3-1 and win on aggregate. So I feel like the entire issue of mentality is something that's sort of undertaken in football these days, especially in a league like the Champions League, where upsets are so very prominent that we've seen in the past few years that, like, I mean, if you looked at the Champions League 10 years ago and people had an issue with a team coming on top, usually that had to do with refereeing or fixing. But then nowadays, if you look at it, you just see some of the most insane upsets that have ever existed. Like, Barcelona winning 5-1 against Lyon after having a 0-0 draw, like, that's not something that you can statistically expect, because usually if you look at it in a home leg and you see a 0-0, you'd expect the second leg to be maybe like a 1-0 or a very, very close game because of the way that the team played in that home or away leg. So the way that motivation is driving these players in the second leg of most of the knockout stages to either come back or maybe even blow a lead, it's extremely important because it sort of affects the way that the entire Champions League is based. Do the matches even matter anymore? Does the the fixing even matter anymore? It's extremely, extremely random. And I feel like whoever does win the Champions League this season will not have won it without some sort of luck.
Yeah, I think that's very true. I think it gives an opportunity to talk about this time's quarterfinal matchups. I think it's very interesting. The road to Madrid is going to be very, very interesting. I think Ajax Juventus is probably the most lopsided one of those. Liverpool Porto also one of them. But I think the other two matchups, they're going to be really good. Tottenham Spurs versus Manchester City. I think that's going to be a great, great game. Both
in English order.
So that's going to be really interesting. I think Man City has a slight favorite, but I think Tottenham wants to prove that they're one of Europe's elite clubs. I think they're going to give it their all. I think Pochettino is going to. I think that game or those legs are going to be like his showing for the Man United job.
Exactly.
Especially those moments. I think if he proves that he can beat Man City with their amazing attack, their dominance right now, I think they'll be really good. So I think that's gonna be like his interview for the job.
Exactly. And if we're talking about the Ajax versus Juventus matchup specifically, like this one for me is the most hardest to predict because both teams made an insane comeback in the second leg. Obviously Ajax somehow coming back to beat Real Madrid. And of course, Juventus as well, somehow coming back to beat Atletico Madrid. And I feel like this matchup is going to be really interesting.
I think that's very true. I think as a Manchester United fan, I think the hardest for me is that we had to draw against Barcelona. Especially considering Manu hasn't been great in the last 2-3 weeks. I think the cracks are starting to show in Ole's system. I think it's been more a product of unleashing the players rather than a systemic change.
Right.
It shows people understand how to like pick apart Manchester United, especially against. I think this is Messi's best season in 3 to 4 seasons. I think he's going to win the Ballon d'Or, especially if they can either get the Champions League or win the double domestically. So I think the Manchester United Barca is going to be kind of lopsided with Barca qualifying. But as a Manchester United fan, you never know, especially after the PSG game.
Exactly. And I feel like if you're looking at this quarterfinals bracket, most people would seem to expect that Barcelona are champions to win the are favorites to win the Champions League, and statistically speaking, that is true. But then again, we never know because Barcelona last year in the quarterfinals were upset by Roma, who I feel were a much inferior team compared to how Man United are currently in their current form. So I feel like this bracket is going to be really interesting, especially with the English quarterfinal in Tottenham versus Man City. But I can say that Man City are probably going to come out on top there, especially with the way Tottenham have been playing the past month and how they've dropped in the title race in the Premier League. So that's definitely going to be interesting to look out for. But what are your predictions for the semifinals? Who do you see coming out from each leg?
Ajax, Juventus, I have to say, I mean, Ronaldo, I don't know. Even though first leg might not benefit Juve, I think Ronaldo there. Liverpool, Porto, yeah. I think Liverpool. I think their front three is coming together, especially Sadio Mane and Firmino. They've been great to see. Salah has obviously dropped from his season last year, which is obviously almost unmatchable considering how great it was. I think Liverpool's coming on here. I think Tottenham, Man City, I think that in my opinion, that's the closest one. Because Tottenham, I think obviously they've lost all the title race, so there's nothing to lose. I think they put all the chips in that one basket of Champions League. But I think I'm going to go Tottenham in that one. And Manchester United, Barca, even though it hurts me to say this, but as a rational, non-biased fan, I have to say it, Barcelona. So I think it's going to be Barcelona, Tottenham, Liverpool, and Juve.
Okay, I'll have to agree with the fact that Juventus, Barcelona, and Liverpool will come out on top. But just with the way that Man City played against Schalke, I'm going to have to go with Man City against Tottenham. But either way, the 4 semifinalists are going to be extremely, extremely competitive, and it's going to be a fun semifinalist to watch.
Yeah, and I think a good thing to see is that it's very refreshing quarterfinal lineup, especially since we don't have Bayern Munich or been for any of the last decade, I would say. Real Madrid was 1 of 3 of the last 4. I think they've been exceptional in the Champions League, especially now that Carvalho has left. I think it's very refreshing to see them not here.
And as a fan of Dutch football, it feels really good to see Ajax competing with these. As a fan of Dutch football, I feel like it's really good to see Ajax competing with these clubs again. And hopefully, you know, with their young core, they might not exactly go back to the European success that they once had, but definitely be able to build something.
Yeah, I think this Ajax team is very interesting because they're fast, they're young, and they're fearless. I think that tie could be interesting, but I favor Juve. But I think the Man U Tottenham is the most interesting tie.
Right,
especially
for sure.
There is two English full. I think another thing that's great is that English football is back. I mean, we have 4 teams of the big teams, 4 great teams, and then our country, we also don't have Chelsea. I think Chelsea are kind of unfortunate not to make the quarterfinals, even the round of 16. I think next year, I think English football is back. It's going to be great for the next couple of years at least, especially the way the number of teams that are represented in the Champions League. We haven't had that representation, that form of representation last decade.
Mm-hmm. It's definitely been more competitive, and I'm happy to see that English football is back to where it was a couple of years ago, back when, you know, Man United and Chelsea were fighting for the Champions League. But speaking of young players, I just want to talk about the current college scene in the NCAA in terms of basketball. What is happening in March Madness, and what do you think is going to happen in the NCAA, especially concerning major college prospects that are going to be entering the NBA draft?
I think this is probably one of the best draft classes we've seen, especially since the Donovan Mitchell Jason draft 2 years ago. I think it could be one of the best drafts we've seen since LeBron, Dwayne Wade, Chris Bosh, and all came out of the 2003-2004 draft. I think for me, even though he could be the most dominant player. He is the most dominant player in college basketball history. But I think the more polished player, the player with the better shot, and the more controlled player, RJ Barrett, is the best prospect in my opinion. And I think Zion Williamson is more uncontrolled fire.
Right.
I think Zion Williamson relies more on his athleticism than like his shooting prowess or his foot skills on the post. So I think RJ Barrett should be the best. I think he's the best basketball prospect, but I think in terms of monetary value and the fact that Zion Williamson just pulls large number of people into the stadium.
Exactly.
I think Zion Williamson is going to be the number one overall pick, but I think the best basketball player in that class is RJ Barrett. I don't think we should discount Cam Reddish. I think he's kind of been sidelined by these two great prospects. And I think Ja Morant also has a chance to be great.
Right.
Reminds me of a Trae Young, kind of short, has handles, can shoot. I feel
like this draft class has a really good mix between a front and backcourt. Because if you look at the backcourt, you have great point guards coming into the draft as well. You have Ja Morant, obviously. You have Trae Jones. You have decent shooters and RJ Barrett coming in. And looking at the front court, you have truly, truly dominant players in Bol Bol, Zion Williamson, Rui Hachimura, the kid from Japan. I mean, these guys are really, really good prospects that will change the shape of the NBA, because I feel like the levels of athleticism that have developed in college basketball over the years truly is something that is perfect for the modern NBA, because the modern NBA does demand bigs who are able to stretch the floor, who are dominant in the paint, and I feel like Zion Williamson is that sort of unicorn player who can do everything, but at the same time, that's also a huge risk. Like, it makes, when you're looking at why New York fans boot Kristaps Porzingis, it comes down to the fact that he was an unproven European prospect, and if you look at Zion Williamson, he is a proven prospect who has dominated college basketball this whole season. But he's such a unicorn player who relies so heavily on his athleticism and his 280-pound frame that an injury has the potential to ruin his career. Now, if you're looking at a safer prospect like RJ Barrett, he's athletic, he can shoot the ball well, he has a better floor than Zion Williamson, I would say, and potentially Zion has the potential to be the greatest basketball player considering how freak of a nature he is.
That's where I disagree. I don't think he has that much potential. I think it's overstated how dominant he's considering the fact that in college basketball, there aren't as many players who are as athletic or have enough strength to match.
Yeah,
them.
That is true.
I think that's kind of how the idea is setting when Zion comes over to the NBA, because there are going to be players who are faster than him, there are going to be players who can jump higher than him, and there are going to be some players who are stronger than him and can take him in the post with DeMarcus Cousins, Draymond Green, and stuff like that. So I think his ceiling is being overstated, but his floor is also being overstated.
Right.
So I think arguably a higher floor as well as a higher ceiling in the modern game.
But if you're the team that has the first pick, and most likely if you don't go Zion Williamson,
I think RJ Barrett is a better player for the modern
game, you have to go Zion Williamson.
Zion Williamson. I don't think there's that much of a difference between the two ceilings. But I mean, in terms of a pure basketball player, pure prospect in an isolated more basketball, I think RJ Barrett is better. But in the NBA, I think where NBA is a star-driven league, you need stars, you need people who have these crazy dunks, who like take over Instagram and stuff. I think they're not big Zion Williamson. I think if the Knicks get the first pick, should take Zion Williamson. I think if Zion is New York, I think that's going to be a great destination for free agents tonight. I think then New York could actually be in the potential race for KD or Kyrie or Kemba. I think what's also interesting for me is that the lottery odds have been like reduced. So even though they're the worst record in the league, they don't have the same odds to be the number one pick. So the number one pick can literally be anybody this year.
Exactly, and I feel like as if you're a team that has the number one pick, considering the way that the NBA is a business these days, you have to take Zion Williamson. He gives you marketability. He gives you an audience. He's going to sell you tickets. He's going to sell you jerseys. RJ Barrett is going to be that player who might win you rings and might win you more games. But I feel like from the perspective of the first overall pick, you're going to have to go Zion Williamson.
Especially a team like the Knicks, they haven't had a bona fide star since probably Carmelo turned 14 when they actually drew crowds. I think one risk that the Knicks will force them to take Zion is that even if they don't have a great team, Zion will still pull people into the stadium. I think the same for RJ Barrett. I think if they have a great team, where RJ Barrett is going to be the foundation for a dynasty or like a potential perennial championship contending team for the next decade. So I think in a vacuum, because New York Knicks don't have a guarantee that they're a really good team or a competitive team, they have to take Zion. They at least have the safety net, having a star who could bring people to the club. I just want to say, I think this is a question of the podcast, a question of the episode. Who do you think has been the best player in the NBA since Donald Trump?
Yeah, and with that, we'll close this episode. Definitely address this question in our next one. But we'd like to thank you for listening to this first episode, if you've listened till here. And we'd appreciate any feedback. We know our mics are a bit trippy, considering that we're just starting off, but we'll definitely try to improve on the quality of that. But overall, we hope you enjoyed the episode. We hope you enjoyed our insights, and we hope you stay in tune for our weekly podcast.
Thank you guys so much for watching. I think it's going to be weekly, and I think in the summer we'll try 3 episodes a week. And James Harden is the MVP, by the way. Bye, guys.
All right, see you. Thank you.